few moments later, two purple-robed figures came into view, having just emerged from the day gate. Varex and O'Nally stripped off their hats so that the wind from the rotors wouldn't do it for them. Two paces behind was Frau Paflagan, leaning forward into the hurricane and hugging himself, clawing up handfuls of wayward bolt so that he wouldn't be stripped nude. Varex and O'Nally paused, flanking the aircraft's door, and turned back to look at him. Each extended an arm and they helped Paflagan clamber inside. Then they piled in behind him. Some automatic mechanism pulled the hatch closed even as the rotors were spinning up and the aircraft beginning to lose its grip on the plaza. Then the pilot rammed the throttles home and the thing jumped 50 feet into the air in a few heartbeats. The wings tilted. It took on some forward velocity and accelerated up and away over the pond and the Burger's Town, then banked away to the west. It was just about the coolest thing I'd ever seen, and I couldn't wait to talk about it in the refectory with my friends. Then I remembered that I was an escaped prisoner. By the time I got into the chronochasm, Voca was long since over. The sound of voices still crowded the well, but it was dwindling rapidly as the naves emptied. Most were leaving the minster, but some would ascend the stairs in the corner towers to resume their work in the warden's courts. I banged and clanged in my haste. As I got lower, though, I had to be more judicious in my movements in spite of the fear that the quickest of the climbers would get there before I could. The first ones up were two young hierarchs and the warden fendant's staff, who were climbing as fast as they could in the hope that they could get to their balcony and catch a glimpse of the aircraft before it flew out of sight. I reached the fendant court from above just before they reached it from below. Caught on the walkway, I looked for a place to hide. This level of the minster was cluttered with things that only a warden fendant could think of as ornaments, mostly busts and statues of dead heroes. The most awful of these was a life-size bronze of Amnectris, who had been the warden fendant at the moment of the third sack. He was depicted in the pose where he had spent the last 20 hours of his life, kneeling behind a parapet, peering through the optics of a rifle that was as long as he was tall. Amnectris was cast in bronze, but the rifle and the lake of spent shell casings in which he was immersed were actual relics. The pedestal was his sarcophagus. I dove behind it. The two fleet-footed ones sprinted down the walkway, headed for the west side of the balcony. They passed right by me. I got up, took the long way round to avoid any more such, and plunged down the steps to the regulant court. I dove to the floor behind the half-wall that ran around the walkway, then levered myself up to hands and knees. In that attitude, I scurried round until I found my cell. I never thought I'd be happy to see the place. Now there was only the small problem that I was streaming with sweat. My chest was heaving. My heart was throbbing like the rotors of that aircraft. I had abrasions on my knees and palms and was trembling with exhaustion and nervousness. There was only so much I could do. I used some blank leaves to mop sweat from my face, drew my bolt around me to cover as much as I could, and arranged myself on my sphere before my window, back to the doorway, as if I'd been gazing out at the scene below. Then it was just a matter of trying to control my breathing as I waited for the moment when someone from the warden regulant staff came to look in on me. "Frau Erasmus?" I turned around. It was Sura Trestinus, looking a bit flushed herself from the climb. She stepped into the cell. I had not spoken to her since 10th night. She seemed oddly normal and human now, as if we were just two cordial acquaintances having a chat.
"Mm-hmm,"
I said, afraid to say more in case my voice would sound funny.
"Do you have any idea what just happened? It's difficult to make out from here. It sounded almost like Voco."
"It was Voco," she said.
"And you should have been there."
I attempted to look aghast, but this was easy given the state I was in. Or maybe she wanted me to be aghast so badly that she was easily fooled. Anyway, she let a few moments go by so that I could twist in the wind. Then she said,
"I'm not going to throw the book at you, not this time, even though it is technically a serious offense."
Besides which, I thought to myself, you'd have to give me Chapter 6,
which I could appeal, and you don't want to have to defend that. Thank you, Sir Tristanus, I said. In the unlikely event that we have another Vulko while I'm here, should I go down for it?
That is correct, she said.
And view it from behind the primate screen. Return here immediately afterwards. Unless it's I whose name gets called, I said. She wasn't looking for humor in this situation, and so this only flustered her. Then she was annoyed at having become flustered. How are you progressing on Chapter 5? She asked. I hope I'll be ready for examination in 1 or 2 weeks, I said. Then I wondered to myself how I was going to retrieve that tablet from Clesthera's eye and sneak it out of here in that amount of time. Sir Tristanus actually showed me the beginnings of a smile before she took her leave. Maybe it had something to do with the fact that the two inquisitors had just left, and whatever strange motivation lay behind her throwing the book at me had departed along with them. Anyway, I got the idea that for all intents and purposes, my punishment was finished now, and the rest was just a formality. This made me most impatient to get on with it. During the rest of the day, I made more progress on Chapter 5 than I had in the previous week.